to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm really excited to be interviewing JC Hutchins. JC is an award-winning novelist, best known for his Seventh Son techno-thriller trilogy released as free podcasts in 2006 to 2007. With around 100,000 downloads still occurring each month, Seventh Son is the most popular podcast novel series in history. The first novel in the series, Seventh Son Descent, is out now in print on Amazon.com from St. Martin's Press, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So welcome, JC.
Joanna Penn, it is an absolute pleasure to be on the show. How are you?
I'm great, and I shall try and match your enthusiasm this morning.
I have the luxury of been awake for hours upon hours, and you know, as and you are, calling at the crack of A-double-S.
Yeah, it's pretty early. Yeah, so maybe we could start off because, you know, maybe some people haven't heard of you yet. So can you tell us a bit about your writing journey, you know, the sort of potted history of JC Hutchins?
Oh, sure. And trust me, I never assume that anyone knows who I am. So this is actually a great opportunity. The kind of my path to publication with Seventh Son began 7 years ago, nearly to the day of this recording. It was actually NaNoWriMo that kind of kicked me in the pants to start writing Seventh Son way back in 2002. And I began writing a high-tech thriller about human cloning and government conspiracies and dangerous technologies and recording human memories and plot twists, and I mean it just goes on and on, and I wrote until the book was done, and that was about 1200 pages later. Yeah, that's what we call needing an edit, but I didn't, you know, but I assumed that the world would the publishing industry and agents would see the brilliance of this long work and would represent it and publish it anyway. This was in 2005 after I'd completed the novel and had polished it and began querying literary agents. Well, predictably, because of its length and maybe because of its content. I'm not sure, because I actually never received any kind of detailed feedback from the 60 literary agents that I pitched back then. I was universally rejected. I was pretty depressed and pretty demoralized by this, because, you know, I'm kind of faced with the situation that is probably not uncommon for a lot of novelists, which is, did I just waste 2 years of my life?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet there was this like, there was this ray of hope on the horizon. And that was, podcasting. I began listening to podcasts in, like February or March of 2005. And throughout that year, and the podcasting landscape was very different back then. Everything was brand new. There were these crazy authors who were recording their, many of them had unpublished manuscripts. They were recording these unpublished manuscripts and releasing them as free serialized podcast novels or audiobooks. And as I marched closer to the end of 2005, I thought, well, if I can't sell Seventh Son, I certainly can share it, just like these guys. And so in early 2006, I began recording the podcast novel and Seventh Son Descent, the first book in what we now know as a trilogy, because I took that monstrous 1,200-page manuscript and chopped it into thirds, the first act of the story being book one in the series. And this way, basically, I did this so that, you know, if no one liked the book, I wouldn't have to record all 1,200 pages. was
That's
like
a
pure
great idea.
Yeah, pure laziness on my part. I mean, I'm, you know, it's like I appear to be like a very busy podcaster, but at my heart, I am a slacker. And so I chopped up the manuscript into thirds and recorded the first novel. And very quickly, I'm blessed to say, very quickly received lots of acclaim within the podcasting community, and folks began to listen, and more folks, and word began to spread. By the end of the Seventh Son trilogy, in the late 2007, you know, we had tens of thousands of listeners and hundreds of people who were spreading the word through my street team called the Ministry of Propaganda, and this grassroots community that had built up around this crazy idea that I had to podcast the novel, I was able to leverage that to get a literary agent and also to get Seventh Son in front of editors at St. Martin's Press. They were interested. We inked a deal, and by goodness, you know, just last week, at the time of this recording, last Tuesday, Seventh Son Descent, the first book in the trilogy, was released in North American bookstores. The dream came true.
Oh, wow. It's such a great story. It really is. And, you know, as someone who's listened to all the podcasts and told everybody to listen to the podcast, they're so brilliant. I'm so glad to have the book. Well, actually, I haven't got the book yet. I ordered the book and I haven't got it yet. So, you know, it will be here, I'm sure. Very shortly.
Well, I really appreciate not only the support of you and a great many others throughout those years, but also, you know, one of these things. And again, I think that your listeners who are writers might cringe a little bit because I'm cutting a little close to the truth here when I say that every writer thinks that they're a fraud, and thinks that one day they're going to wake up and the entire world's going to realize, wait a minute, you're just a no good hack. Why am I interested in you? And that was my quiet dread that I had as we marched closer to the release date of Seventh Son Descent in print. And I was kind of quietly terrified that that come publication day, my audience would wake up and magically realize that I was a fraud. And yet, this is amazing. You know, we went from, you know, 3,700 in Amazon.com the day before to 188 overall for the launch day of Seventh Son, which was remarkable. Mm. And even, my fans were purchasing multiple copies. I even have a fan in the UK who purchased 100 copies.
Oh, how lovely. That's so sweet.
And you know, and it's like, and that is just kind of mind boggling. And it kind of also, in a way, illustrates how this unusual path to publication doesn't just breed fans, it breeds super fans. Like, when was the last time you ever heard of someone buying 100 copies of Stephen King's book, you know?
Mm. Oh, it absolutely.
It simply doesn't happen. And and this little engine that could story, the underdog story, is having a happy ending.
Oh, yeah, it's just a brilliant story. And I want to come back to podcasting in a bit. But to those people who haven't actually heard Seventh Son, the podcast, or have read any of your free stuff, can you maybe explain a bit about the general storyline of Seventh Son? And I will be putting the trailer in as well, but maybe you could just explain the plot.
Oh, sure. Well, the book starts in the state of Kentucky in the United States. The U.S. president is working the crowd at a political rally, and he picks up a child and kisses the child for the press photographers, and the child pulls out a switchblade and slices the president's throat from ear to ear. Boom, he's dead. And that is the prologue of the book. We in chapter one, we cut to 2 weeks later, where seven complete strangers living in different parts of the United States are inexplicably kidnapped by mysterious government agents, and all on the same day, and brought to a super secret government facility where they're all thrown into the same room. And despite some physical differences, you know, some are fat and some are thin, it is absolutely clear that they are the same guy, that absolutely identical. And they also have not similar, childhood memories, but identical childhood memories. And they are absolutely wigging out and freaking out about this. And in walks a scientist who says, you are unwitting participants in a human cloning experiment called Project Seven Sun. You were never supposed to know that you were clones. We have been silently observing you for many years, and you were supposed to just live your life without knowing about this. But the man who masterminded the recent assassination of the U.S. president, we found out who he is, and we had to bring you together because we think that you're the only person who can get inside his head and stop him. And one of the clones asks, "Well, who is it?" And the scientist says, "It's the man who you were cloned from. It's the man whose flesh you share and whose childhood memories you have in your head." And that is the first three chapters of the book.
Mm. And, you know, as someone who's listened to it all, it's just it's a really fast-paced thriller. There's lots of explosions and death and body count and, you know, sort of it's conspiracy theories all over the place. And it was the first podcast novel I've ever listened to, and it's really got me into the whole kind of genre, and I definitely recommend it to people listening. So I guess, you know, sort of pulling all of that together, and talking about the thriller as a genre, you know, I'm personally doing NaNoWriMo at the moment, and you mentioned that you started Seventh Son on NaNoWriMo back in 2002. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if maybe you could give up, and I'm actually trying to write a thriller.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I wondered if you could give us your top three tips for writing a thriller novel.
Sure. And I'll follow it up with a fourth tip on writing in general. Mm. Thrillers demand a certain level of of commitment from the author, because you aren't just telling a tale. You have to quicken the pulse, and you have to be relentless in your pace at times. You can start out slow if you so choose, but I mean, you know, by page 50, if you're not cooking with gas, you're not playing nice with the genre. Mm. So one of the things that I often do, that I've done with my thrillers, and I've written a couple, is to start the story with a bang. In the instance of the prologue, the president of the United States being murdered by a 4-year-old boy, and the great mystery that evokes. Why would a boy do that? What, how could that possibly happen? And tease that, you know, and pay it off later in the story. But I also believe that, you know, a good story should start when your hero's life is immediately changed. So don't pussyfoot around with, like domesticity and the day job of this guy and getting into his head. No, like, he needs to be like grabbed and thrown into a van right away. You know, it's just like that, right? If you can strap a rocket to your story and grab the shirt of your reader and just yank them out of their shoes early on, that'll help. The second tip that I have is always is to, whenever possible, end your scenes, or particularly end your chapters, with cliffhangers. Mm. This could be a particular kind of narrative plot twist, or it could be like an evocative line of dialogue. You know, like, wait, I thought he was dead. It's like, how could you not turn the page when the supposed dead man is like staring you and, you know, staring the hero in the eyes, right? Oh my gosh, I got to turn the page. The third tip is to be really conscious of pacing. It's okay to have longer chapters, particularly when you're kind of in a particular transition between set pieces. I like to call this stuff the grout. It is absolutely necessary to glue your tiles together, but it is also kind of, you know, it can be kind of boring, you know, trying to get, you know, your people from one place to the other, but it's absolutely necessary. But when you start hitting those action or those thrilling points of your story, keep those chapters short. And by keeping them short, you are, you know, and ending them with cliffhangers, you are guaranteeing people to keep turning the pages. So study the genre. If you're not a writer of thrillers, heaven's sakes, you know, pick up some Jeffrey Deaver. I mean, he is a thriller writer who demands to be studied. He is one of my favorite authors, Jeffrey Deaver. Check out his Lincoln Rhyme series of novels. There's a character named Lincoln Rhyme that he writes. So good, so good. I mean, I read his book, the Coffin Dancer, and it changed my life. It was like I was so blown away by the book. I was like, okay, yeah, this is exactly I want to do this for a living. But my fourth tip, and this is kind of like the bonus tip, is to just write. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but write without fear. You know, I mentioned the inner voice that says that we are frauds and that we are never good enough, and maybe it's the voice of our third grade grammar teacher telling us that, you know, like, you know, chastising us for not diagramming a sentence properly, whatever it may be. Tell all that noise to shut up, because you're writing. And when you write without fear, the words flow and you can more quickly dive into the world that you're creating. And when you are in that world that you are creating, you are, you're swimming in bliss, and you will be in the momentum of the ritual of writing will propel you further into the tale.
Mm. And those are some brilliant tips there. And I'm trying to keep with that. I keep, you know, when I'm writing it, I'm like, do you know, this is getting a bit boring. I better just, you know, something has to happen now. But, you know, because they can't keep discussing this. Something has to happen, you know.
And interestingly, and here's a tip that I learned actually during the rewrite of Seventh Son, is that, you know, the first half of Seventh Son Descent, the first novel in the trilogy, is pretty talky. Mm. We have, we got a lot of ground to cover. We got to cover that they're clones, and how their memories were recorded, and, you know, and what the bad guy wants. So anytime you can get your characters up and walking around, it the same information is being conveyed, but because there is the illusion of physical movement, right?
Mm.
Because there is movement, even if it is only physical, like walking from one room to another, or, you know, opening up a door and seeing a warehouse or something, this actual physicality, manages to stimulate the imagination in a better way than them just kind of sitting in a room and talking. Another thing that I did in the rewrite of Seventh Son for the print edition is that I also would cut to the villains. I would cut to new chapters of, you know, the machinations of the villains. Mm-hmm. and what terrible, no good business they were up to. So, you know, so kind of very, you know, in a way, thinking cinematically, particularly if you're a fan of movies, thinking cinematically and how would be an interesting way to tell this story, to keep it visually fresh. And in the instance of, you know, you being a reader in the, you know, visually fresh in the reader's mind, and if that means that they're walking down a corridor and saying the same information that they might very well be, sitting down, then have them walk down the corridor, because that, you know, because that creates the illusion of movement.
Mm. And just mentioning movies there, you have been sort of, there is a movie deal, is there? Sort of possibly?
Yeah. The Seventh Son trilogy has been optioned by Warner Brothers for motion film development, motion picture development. The last I heard from my film agent, a draft of the script was being written. It's probably done by now. And the movie is considered in development. When the movie moves from being in development to in production, then I can light cigars with flaming $100 bills. But until then, it's 40 hour work days and 40 hour writerly and podcast work days. Yeah.
Oh, but it is exciting. And I do, you know, I like the fact that you can sort of see what's happening in your head when you read Seventh Son, and it is very movie written, I think. I mean, it could be very visual, which is another thing I'm trying to kind of copy, is make this so that it could be a movie.
One of the things that a lot of people say that it is a very visual book, and that's deliberate, because I like to paint word pictures, right? Mm-hmm. I like to make sure that you feel anchored in the scene. And if that means describing, you know, paintings on the wall or some ungodly mechanical contraption that clones human beings that's hanging from the ceiling. You know, anything I can do to kind of root you there. And another kind of writerly, you know, thing that I do is that I try to describe things in ways that that bring an everyday kind of tangibility to a thing. For instance, you know, someone gets shot, you know, in the head, right? And you could say that a hole appeared in his head, or you could say that a hole the size of a quarter, you know, could appeared in his head, or the exit wound. And I'm sorry to be a little crass and gross here, but the exit wound was the size of a tea saucer, right? Like that tangibly puts a size, an everyday and pedestrian and human, relatable kind of you know, physicality to these things, and I found that that works pretty, you know, pretty well.
Actually, there is a question I have about violence, you know, in thriller versus horror, because this is something I guess that I don't like horror, you know, really disturbing violence, but I like thriller violence, you know, with sort of explosions. Yeah. And you have huge body count, and body count's really important, I think, in a thriller. But how do you know where the violence goes from thriller to horror? You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. And I have author friends who love to plumb the depths of
Scott Sigler,
of horror and gore. You know, and I think that really what it is it's a difference between how one describes the violence. You know, and I often will do less is more, because I think that, you know, by saying that the exit wound was the size of a tea saucer. That's all you need to know. Like, you don't need to know, you know, that the brains are on the wall. You don't need to, you know, describe the pattern of the blood spray on the floor. You don't need to do any of that, because you've conveyed it all in words that aren't gory at all. I mean, like the size of a tea saucer. What's gory about that? You know what I mean? And yet it conveys a visceral reaction. Maybe even because of the paradox that you're using, you know, something so everyday to describe something so horrific. So for me, it's often the level of detail that one goes into in describing the violence. In another novel that I've written called Personal Effects Dark Art, which is a supernatural thriller, you know, there's a sequence about halfway through, about two thirds of the way through the book, that really marks it's in a moment of intense violence. And it marks basically the beginning of the third act, where it's just a chase all the way to the end. And I wanted to, you know, kind of clearly and viscerally and quite violently describe, you know, this act of violence to show that the reader that, you know, that all bets are off now, right? But in Seventh Son, you know, I will, with most of the violence seen in it, with a few exceptions, it's kind of done in a less is more way. In the sequel to Seventh Son Descent, called Seventh Son Deceit, Book 2, which has not yet been published and has not yet been picked up for publication, you know, the author commits genocide. A Middle Eastern nation is, you know, wiped off the face of the planet with weapons of mass destruction, and that was an instance where less was absolutely more, where we don't even see, the camera never cuts to this nation to see this violence. It is all being relayed over the radio. And what it does is it conveys all the information, and our characters react emotionally to it. But I just simply couldn't bring myself to, you know, to cut to the death of millions of people. I just didn't have it in me. I didn't want to tell that kind of story.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Well, I've got so many questions.
I'm such a blabbermouth. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. Okay, so one of the other things I had is, you have so many different kind of conspiracy theories in the book. And I wondered, where do you get the ideas? You know, what is your inspiration? Do you read one of those tabloids they have in, you know, Men in Black or something?
Right. No, I don't read tabloids, though, there is one here in the United States called the Weekly World News, which is clearly invented. It's clearly fictional, you know, content, but it is so clever. I get some ideas, from, basically, I try to put myself in the heads of conspiracy theorists, and one of the best ways I've known how to do that is to listen to a radio program called Coast to Coast AM. And here in the United States, you know, in North America, it's quite popular in the late night hours on AM radio stations. And it's just a bunch of guys talking about, you know, 2012 and the end of the world and alien abductions and and the NSA tapping your phones and the CIA doing mind control experiments and all of this stuff. And you know, and listening to that kind of helps me not only get ideas for fiction, but also kind of puts me in the shoes of people who truly believe that. And for me, you know, one of the things I love doing is building intricate conspiracies that, that often are government related. Because mistrusting the government is just so much fun.
And
figuring out ways to, and these conspiracies are often, at least in my fiction, quite preposterous, but figuring out ways to kind of anchor it in reality by citing real conspiracies or real current events or historical events that bolster the plausibility of a preposterous conspiracy theory. You know, it's all about, you know, telling great lies and obfuscating the lie with lots of truth.
Oh, absolutely. And you don't feel that they're preposterous when you're listening to the novel. It does feel like it could really be happening somewhere. Fantastic. Okay, so a couple more questions. I guess, you know, the book is out in print, but you're doing this stack of extra free giveaways. Can you maybe outline what you're doing extra and why you're doing them and why authors need to do all this kind of extra marketing stuff now?
Sure. Well, the landscape for a published author, be it print on demand, vanity press, independent press, or a mainstream press, like Saint Martin's Press, is it's extremely competitive to get media coverage, and I don't care where you are in the world. I mean, you know, newspapers are killing their book sections. Television programs are no longer covering books like they used to. Same thing with radio. So you're kind of stuck. And the publishing industry itself is shrinking, and trying to figure out how to market stuff. So you should be a savvy. You should embrace being a savvy marketeer and shamelessly stealing good ideas from other people to make that happen. One of the things that I believe is that by giving away my content for free online, I'm able to attract customers that would never have heard of Seventh Son and never would have heard of J.C. Hutchins by kind of bringing them in and letting them test drive the story. This is no different than walking into a bookstore, grabbing a book off the shelf and plopping down into a comfy chair and reading the first 10 chapters, right? Or reading the first few chapters. You know, instead, I'm bringing the bookstore to you. And not only am I bringing the bookstore to you, but I'm empowering you to make an informed purchase decision. You know, if you listen to a few episodes of the new Seventh Son Descent podcast novel that I'm releasing in weekly serialized form, if you listen to it and you enjoy it and you can't wait to hear the ending to buy a copy of the book, why, you are empowered to pick up the book right away. I'm also releasing, and if you don't like it, well then no harm. I mean, you didn't spend a red cent obtaining the content. I'm also releasing the novel in serialized PDF form so that if a fan doesn't like to listen to their fiction, but they like to read it, they can experience it that way. I released a prequel short story anthology called 7 Days that is set 2 weeks before the novel. So that's a great kind of ground floor entryway for new fans. And it also helps old fans kind of get back into the world of Seventh Son. The text of the book is being serialized at boingboing.net, one of the top 5 blogs on the planet. And again, the idea is to get to get the book in front of as many people as possible, people who would never would have even heard of J.C. Hutchins, and not only do that, not only promote it in that way, but arm them with the information, meaning the book, arm them with the information to make an informed purchasing decision. And I'm also releasing free music that is written, quote, written and performed by a character in the novel. So you're getting, you know, free fiction and free music and free updates from me on a nearly daily basis until mid-December.
And I know you're a machine. It's amazing all the stuff you put out. And I guess one thing, you know, I want to stress to the listeners is you are now a published author by, you know, a big publishing house, by St. Martin's Press. You know, this is not a self-publishing deal. This is a big traditional publisher. And the fact is you're still doing all this, you know, so more so other people have to do it, you know, if they're starting out or self-publishing, you know.
Right. And to kind of complement that, I don't, and maybe it's because I've been doing it myself for more than 3 years in the podcast space, but I can't depend on anyone, not even, you know, St. Martin's Press's publicity department I can't rely on them to get me in front of, you know, media, because of the ultra competitive, you know, space that, you know, the media space that they're pitching to. I compliment, and so what I do is I complement their efforts by doing my own outreach. It's not just that I'm releasing free content at my website and just kind of waiting for, you know, newspaper reporters to call me based on, St. Martin's Press's pitches. I'm also, you know, reaching out to bloggers, podcasters like you, and you know, and also traditional media on my own fronts, so that we are not replacing one another's efforts, but we are working together to do this. And I do believe that, you know, an author is probably the best person suited to tell their story, and I don't mean their novel, I mean their personal story, and to pitch their story to media. So whether you are, you know, a mainstream writer or you are a self-published newcomer, you are ethically, I believe you are ethically obligated to shake your fanny for your book.
That's great. And I guess, you know, and I think your writing is fantastic, but were you picked up because of your platform primarily? I mean, obviously there's a great book, but you have created a platform and readers and listeners. Is that why you got the deal?
I don't know, and I haven't asked that specific question to my keepers. I will say that, you know, the fact that the podcast novel was rolling out attracted the interest of an editor at St. Martin's Press, who presented an opportunity to write this supernatural thriller that I mentioned called Personal Effects Dark Art. So my platform and the quality of my storytelling, dovetailed into that deal, which happened, and we signed the contract on that, and as soon as the ink was dry, I then turned to St. Martin's Press and said, well, you know, I've got this other thing that I'm really known for. Can we cut a deal for that? And they said yes. So for me, you know, I would, you know, they wouldn't have picked up if they thought the book was crap.
Oh, well, I know it's not crap.
Right. Well, we know it's not crap, but I don't think they would have ran with it, simply because I had a large platform. Because, frankly, when you compare me to a mainstream media platform, my audience size is nothing. I mean, it's a pittance. So I think that it was probably a combination of the quality of the work and the very engaged and enthusiastic fan base that has come up with Seventh Son.
We're almost out of time, but one more question, I guess, is about the podcasting, and you talked about it earlier. But so what has podcasting done for you? I guess as an author, we can tell what it's done. You know, it's got you this amazing fan base. But and also personally, what has podcasting done for you personally, and would you recommend it to other people?
Podcasting, ultimately, you know, while I am very comfortable in front of the mic with you, there was a time, when I wasn't. There was a time when I was not assertive about my work. There was a time when I did not believe in the quality of my work or my worth as a storyteller. It was only, and particularly in 2005 when I'm receiving rejection after rejection for Seventh Son by publishing professionals. Mm-hmm. However, once I began releasing the content and started receiving not just, you know, feedback, but glowing feedback from listeners, did I finally begin to understand that, wait a minute, you know, you maybe you aren't the no good hack that you think you are. Maybe you are not the failure you believe you are. Maybe you, maybe this work not only has worth, but, you know, has a future in print after all. I mean, again, you know, when I turned on the microphone in 2006, I did it as an experiment. I didn't do it to get published. It was only after the audience came that I kind of wooed my, you know, convinced myself to resume the agent hunt, as it were. So what it did for me ultimately is not only, you know, put me in front of a bunch of people who became my friends and made friends like you, Joanna, but also, you know, the kind of the mission critical thing is it gave me a backbone. It gave me confidence in myself. And that was something that was not there before. Do I recommend podcasting or giving away, your fiction? I do. I do believe that authors are best suited when they are at least releasing some form of their fiction, for free online, to build an author platform. I do want to caution folks that, that doing a podcast novel is an incredible amount of work. For every half hour that a person will hear on a podcast, about between 6 to 8 hours of effort was put into that. So, I mean, and that's effort that you as an author will have to invest. And that's quite a heck of a commitment. So what I often do is kind of do a compromise. I suggest that authors, try the traditional route to publication, meaning, you know, pitch your book to agents, make it the best it can be, and pitch it to agents. And you know, if you want to do the mainstream thing, and if only after you've exhausted your options, then do the podcast novel thing. Because if the agents say yes, well, you have saved yourself hundreds and hundreds of hours worth of effort.
But no, that's just fantastic. That was a great interview, JC. Fantastic. So can you just tell us where people can find out about Seven Sun and more about you?
Sure. Folks can find me at jchutchins.net. And if they'd like to follow me on Twitter, I am JC Hutchins.
Brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much for your time.
Oh, Joanna, it was such an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Kilroy 2.0 is here. Kilroy 2.0 is everywhere. Kilroy 2.0 will be everywhere. And John and Dr. Mike and Father Thomas and the psychopathic John Alpha, as the most popular podcast novel series in history, gets a reboot. Seven Sun Descent is in print now. The Beta Clones are back with new scenes, new set pieces for the print novel. The President of the United States is dead, murdered by a 4-year-old boy, and it's up to John and the other Beta Clones to hunt the man behind the assassination, John Alpha. To celebrate Seven Sun Descent's bookstore debut, author J.C. Hutchins, that's me, is releasing more clone-killing content at his website and beyond. An entirely new serialized podcast recording of Seven Sun Descent's print edition manuscript, serialized PDFs of the book, free music by John Smith, Seven Sun, 7 Days, a prequel anthology, and the full text of the novel, serialized at boingboing.net, all available now. Support the print debut of Seven Sun Descent. Learn more and download the free audiobook and other content at jchutchins.net and at podiobooks.com.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!